In Kenneth Pollack's new book about the conflict between Iran and America, there's a stunning moment, one among many. A reform-minded Iranian reproaches an American. He said back in the 1990s, "You do everything that the Iranian hardliners want." Well, the irony, Pollack observes, is that the U.S. had in fact been trying to do everything they thought the reformers wanted. Moral of the story, whatever the U.S. does about Iran, it seems Iranians will be against it because the Americans did it. No wonder that Kenneth Pollack's book is titled The Persian Puzzle. It's a lot longer on problems than on solutions. Kenneth Pollack was a CIA analyst, directed Persian Gulf Affairs on the National Security Council, and is now at the Brookings Institution's Savant Center for Middle East Policy. Welcome to the program.
Thank you. Thanks so much for having me.
One important lesson of your book is that while we Americans may underestimate the sins we've committed in Iranian eyes in this relationship, the Iranians surely overestimate them.
Right. It's one of the imbalances that we have with Iran, and these imbalances, psychological in most cases, have perverted the relationship over the last 50 years. Iranians after the 1953 coup, and it's important to remember that in 1953 it was the CIA who toppled the popular Iranian Prime Minister Mohammad Mossadegh. But forever after, Iranians believed that the United States was deeply involved in their affairs and that involvement has continued to this day. You find Iranians constantly asking questions like, why was it that you wanted Khomeini in power after the Iranian Revolution? They seem to believe that we are involved in their affairs, and they deeply resist that. At the same time, you have a regime which came to power defining itself as an anti-American agent. They saw the world as divided between good and evil, and this regime does continue to see the United States as pure evil, and their job as the champions of good and Islam is to fight us.
Of course, we should add here that it was our president who coined the phrase axis of evil and included the Iranians. And so we're not immune to Manichaean talk either.
No, absolutely not. And obviously there are problems on our side as well. We have tended to have a very simplistic view of Iran. And one of the things that you recognize about Iran very quickly, if you spend any time looking at the place, is there is no such thing as a simple answer to any question about Iran. Every answer to any question about Iran has to start with, it depends.
I get the impression from reading your book that we have to assume that because of Iran's view of the world and Iran's view of the threats that we pose to them, and also because of the behavior of other world powers in Europe and Asia, Iran will seek and probably develop nuclear weapons.
I think that that is the case, and I think that there is a consensus emerging within the IAEA, what they've learned in Iran, even also among the European powers, that the Iranians are trying to acquire at least the capability to build a nuclear bomb in very short order.
Can you imagine an Iranian regime with a nuclear arsenal, however large it might be, regarding that simply as a deterrent in the way that other nuclear forces have seen nuclear weapons? Or would they regard them as potential weapons of revenge that they feel they should take out on neighboring countries or on us?
The problem is we don't know. This regime is not, first of all, they're not irrational, and they're not reckless in the way that someone like Saddam Hussein was. They've actually demonstrated themselves to be very prudent. Again, they're anti-American and they are aggressive, but they're very cautious about how they do things. And it is clear that deterrence is one of their desires for having a nuclear weapon. The problem is this government is composed of a whole range of different viewpoints. Some of those viewpoints do argue for acquiring the nuclear weapons for offensive purposes. And I think from our perspective, it'd be much better if we could simply dissuade Iran from acquiring the weapons so that we don't have to run the risk of figuring out which group is actually going to determine Iran's foreign policy.
I want you to pursue this observation a bit more, that Iran, in fact, seems to have learned from its mistakes, as opposed to, say, Saddam Hussein, who would make one disastrous war after another and constantly miscalculate the way the world would react to him. Iran? Not so.
Exactly. This is a very important distinction. What we've seen from the Iranians over the years is, again, they're aggressive. They push. But when they meet resistance, they have tended to pull back. A perfect example of this was in the mid to late 1990s, 1996-97. They were responsible for the terrorist attack on Khobar Towers. They also got caught in Europe with another terrorist attack. As a result of those two things, Iran pulled back completely, turned off a lot of its terrorism activities, really reined in its horns because it was afraid of both an American conventional military response and European economic sanctions.
Reading the story of U.S. relations with Iran over the past half century didn't leave me with great confidence in analysis and intelligence. There's so many times when the U.S. understanding of what's going on in Iran is fundamentally wrong. It makes one wonder, you know, whether we should have a National Security Council staff or a dartboard to figure out what's going on. There are some critical errors made about Iran over the years. Yeah,
there's no question about it. There are two different sets of problems with Iran. One is the U.S.'s terrible intelligence gathering capabilities in Iran, and this has been true for 50 years. For the first 25 years, it was because the Shah forbade us from collecting intelligence on his country, and because he was our ally, we respected that decision. For the second 25 years, it was because we were dealing with a rabid, fundamentalist, theocratic government that had tremendous control over its population and was superb at ferreting out all U.S. intelligence assets in the country. And as a result, on a number of occasions, the Iranians were able to roll up U.S. intelligence assets. So one part of the problem is pure collection. The other part of the problem is in the analysis side, which is that Iran is a deeply unpredictable country, and we're not the only ones who have misread them time and again. The problem is their polity is deeply fragmented, and it's always very difficult for any outsider, including Iranians, to figure out how all those different factions are going to suddenly line up when they're forced to make a decision.
In your line of work, people sometimes assign risk, you know, probability of things. In your mind, the probability of the United States fighting Iran or striking at Iran sometime in the next decade, long shot, very unlikely to happen, or something you just assume is quite possible?
Well, I certainly think it's possible. I think it unlikely, because when I look at the various military scenarios, they don't look terribly appealing to me. And as best I can tell, most of the people in the Bush administration tend to feel the same way. But that said, you know, all bets are off. Iran is capable of doing rather aggressive things. Sometimes they do overstep themselves. And by the same token, you know, this is an administration that seems rather committed to regime change in a whole variety of places around the Middle East. And Iran is, as you pointed out, a member of the Axis of Evil. I wouldn't bet my salary that we're not involved in some kind of a military operation against Iran in the next 10 years.
Kenneth Pollack, author of The Persian Puzzle, The Conflict Between Iran and America. Thank you very much for talking with us.
Thank you, Robert.